Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during the weekend and also following our noontime news. And today, I guess we should say Happy New Year, Arthur.
Yes, it starts, the Jewish New Year starts tonight, but I want to say you don't have to be Jewish to celebrate a New Year today. I think we all need a New Year. So if you're one of those, like most people I know, who need a New Year, you get an opportunity in September. You don't have to wait till January. You
can wipe the slate clean.
Right. Yeah, you can go right to sleep. I know. I must say, it's scary around here, and this is a not scary neighborhood. But I mean, the restaurant that opened is now, again, closed. I haven't tried other places, but everybody is wearing masks on the street again, which they were not for quite a while. Of course, you can't go in anywhere, indoors anywhere, without a mask. But anyway, it is a new year, and, you know, it also is a year, believe it or not, Marshall, that I'm on this keto diet.
I believe it, because I'm a little over a year on doing what I'm doing. Boy, we both started right around the same time.
Yes, we did. So I actually date mine to Labor Day weekend of last year, because we went to my godson's, who had just moved into a house, and ate in the backyard and blah, blah, blah. That was my last taste of pasta until Thanksgiving. Now, think about this. I gave in 2 months, September, October, well, most in November, almost 3 months. I finally gave in and ate pasta, and I have not eaten pasta since. But I'm at that point now. I've been on a plateau so long now that I gave in and bought a box of spaghetti. I am intending to eat some spaghetti this week at home, where it belongs. Because I don't trust, if you're only limiting your carbohydrates, you only want to eat them when they're really good. So yesterday, actually, we went to the beach. We ate in a place that is more or less outdoors, and they had great French fries. So I did eat some French fries, but I only ate them because they were really terrific. But anyway, back to Rosh Hashanah, which can be a very high carbohydrate holiday, because we're all supposed to eat things that are sweet for Rosh Hashanah. This is, of course, this is not religious. This is totally tradition, let's call it. I was going to call it something else that wasn't so positive. But let's say it's tradition. Jews eat sweet things on for Rosh Hashanah to ensure a sweet year. It's superstition. So things the rabbis won't tell you. On the other hand, I have a friend, Rabbi Avi Keller, who is, I think, the most scholarly and worldly, in a way. He's a Hasid from the Lubavitch community, but he knows a lot about food and the food ways of the world. And he is, by the way, a supervisor of a kitchen in Manhattan. But anyway, Avi just discovered, and I didn't know this, that Turkish Jews, don't have what most Ashkenazi Jews have. Ashkenazi meaning European Jews, they don't have, we have honey and apples to dip into the honey. Well, some people just dip challah, but it should be an apple for Rosh Hashanah. And then you can switch to the challah. But Turks make an applesauce with sugar, not honey, and they actually make a puree applesauce. Of course, it's Turkish, so it's not just applesauce like my grandmother used to make or your grandmother used to make. It's applesauce scented with rose water. I love the scent of rose water myself. So some people think it smells like soap, but I actually, I've been to that part of the world enough to know it's a great smell. In any case, the dish that I do make, but I have not made because I'm on, even before I went on this very, very low carbohydrate diet, I was watching, I was testing my blood sugar, and when I ate this dish, my blood sugar soared, and so I stopped eating it. And it's a crispy chicken, thighs, I just make thighs, with tzimis. Now, tzimis, you may know, is a Eastern European vegetable dish. My grandmother made it with sweet potatoes and prunes and a piece of meat, a big piece of meat, and it was sweet and sour, this dish. It was, you boil the sweet potatoes, and then you bake them with prunes and blah, blah. I'm not going to give you a recipe now. Actually, there must be a recipe for this in my book, Jewish Home Cooking. However, I make this tzimis now. Now, by the way, so this is interesting, I think. This tzimis that comes from two Jewish food writers from a book called The Gefilte Variations, I believe. I have to say, this recipe is so good. It has made the rounds, and it's in several cookbooks. And there's a new Jewish cookbook called Jew-ish, by a guy named Jake Cohn, who lives in Queens. And I hear it's a really good book. I haven't seen it, but he gives this recipe, too. So the tzimis is, I say, interesting because it reminds me, it's not very different than the topping that Central Asians put on their rice pilaf, called either pilau or plov, depending upon what country you come from. And I was talking about that only last week because Afghanis make pilau. In fact, you would have to say the national dish of Afghanistan is the Kabul version of a rice pilaf, pilau, which has meat in it, lamb. But as always, all these pilaus from Afghanistan and the plovs that I know from eating in Central Asian restaurants here in Brooklyn always are topped with caramelized carrots, often mixed with raisins. And it's not unlike this dish, the crispy chicken thighs, in that it has those prunes, not raisins, and carrots. So both of those, by the way, are very high carbohydrate, especially, of course, the prunes. Let me see if I can find this recipe. I know it's in my files here, and I'm sitting in front of crispy chicken thighs. How about that? I think that's where it is. Anyway, this is a great dish, and it doesn't have to be New Year for you to make it. And where is the recipe? I'm having trouble. So let me move on to eat your vegetables. I have a new doctor. Let's start with him. And we're talking about weight loss. I tell him I've just lost 50 pounds. And he said, oh, I just lost 40 pounds. He still was pretty chubby. So I said, oh, how did you do it? And he says, oh, I went on this diet. It's from the Carnation Company, you know, the company that makes milk products. And he gives me this list. It's obvious he hands this out. I said, you know, I got this list maybe 50 years ago. This is as old as the hills, and I have to say, for most people, it doesn't really give enough information to make up a good diet. It just sort of lists of, you know, what's good for your weight loss, what's not. Oh, he says to me, do you know, he's challenging me here, do you know how big a meat portion should be? I said, yeah, of course, it should be 6 ounces. He says, oh, no, it should be like the size of a deck of cards. I said, well, just think about this, Doc. If the deck of cards is a half an inch thick, it weighs half as much as one that's 1 inch thick. So it's really more dependent on the weight of the product than the size that it is. But if you want to go by a deck of cards, I would say in a lot of cases you're probably eating less meat than you would be allowed otherwise. So I realized here's yet another doctor who knows nothing about nutrition. And another thing he challenged me on was he was telling me he eats a lot of spinach salad. I said, you understand that spinach is not as good for you raw as cooked. In fact, it's devoid of most anything except some minerals, some trace minerals. Even the iron that spinach is rich with, you know, like Popeye, even the iron is not really accessible unless you cook the spinach, and in fact, if you cook it with some fat. So that's why I always, you know, almost always, cook my spinach and then sauté it in olive oil, which is a healthy oil. So this was all very surprising to him, and I think to most people, that most vegetables actually are better for you when they're cooked than when they're raw. There's a lot of this raw business going on. And juicing, that's even worse, because juicing, you're extracting water containing some good mineral, some good nutrition from the leaves, but you're leaving back all the fiber. And in some cases, that's the main benefit of the vegetables. Now, so here's one. I don't like eating. And also, by the way, if you like eating raw vegetables, don't let me stop you by telling you they should be cooked. You eat, if as long as you eat vegetables, you're okay. And eat a lot of vegetables is even better. And I don't know, I guess this morning somebody said to me, even early this morning, I know a lot of adults who don't eat their vegetables. Do you know adults who don't eat vegetables?
Yes.
Yes.
I do. I do know adults who won't eat vegetables. I was one of them up until about 5 years ago.
Are any of them very old?
No, they're mostly in their 30s. 30s
oh,
and 40s.
Well, there you go. Who knows how old they're going to get? Statistically, they're not going to get to be very old. But, you know, we all fight statistics, don't we? We hope. Anyway, I do have the chicken recipe in front of me, and I highly suggest, even if you're not Jewish, that you should try this recipe. And it is from a book written by Liz Alpern and Jeffrey Yoskowitz, if you want to look them up. And here it is. Let me say, the one thing that makes this extra special, I think, is the first ingredient. 3 tablespoons, a lot, of grated fresh ginger root. 3 tablespoons. You could even use a little more. Excuse me, these days I grate it on a microplane, but I used to grate it on a grater. It doesn't matter. But you need a good 3 full tablespoons. And 3 tablespoons, and here's, by the way, the part that is not good for me, 3 tablespoons of honey. Now, listen, the standard Jewish honey is golden, what is it called? Something golden. It used to be my sponsor on the radio, too. But, you know, it's the taste of honey that I know. But I've used many different honeys for this because I think if it was a short period here where I was trying to use up honey because I had too much honey in the house and too many jars of honey, and so I made this dish a lot. Set the oven, by the way, to 400 degrees. And I also want to say I love to make this in a cast iron skillet. Because the first time I got it, it was made in a cast iron skillet. Now, if you look this up on the internet, you're going to see that it looks so beautiful in a cast iron skillet because carrots orange, skillet black, you got the chicken in there. It should be browned and beautiful by the time you're finished. So it really does look great. And I happen to have an enormous, enormous, enormous black iron skillet. So I have actually made this for a crowd. And you do get oohs and ahs if it's in a black iron skillet. You can do it in a roasting pan, too. It's at least something goes on top of the stove and in the oven. Could be a cast iron, enameled cast iron. So mix together your 3 full tablespoons of grated ginger, your 3 full tablespoons of honey, and 1 tablespoon of oil. May I suggest that you measure out the oil first and then measure out the honey, because then the honey will slide out of the spoon because the oil has been in it. You want to add some salt, and this recipe gets a good amount of salt, at least 2 teaspoons of salt here. And, you know, I sometimes make it with hot red pepper flakes and sometimes without. It's good without. But the original recipe calls for 1/2 teaspoon. It's a nice amount of red pepper flakes. Mix that all together. Now, in your black iron skillet or whatever heavy-bottomed, oven-proof, top-of-the-stove pot you're going to use, heat another tablespoon of oil and brown the chicken. First, skin side down until it's brown. It usually takes 7 or 8 minutes for me. If it's taking 7 or 8 minutes, you know that the heat is perfect. If it's browning too quickly, then you know you got to reduce the heat. As it gets brown, transfer the chicken to a bowl and just coat it with this glaze that you made of ginger and honey. Now you have a clean pan. Well, you have the fat left in the pan from the chicken. Add your onion, and you're going to want, I like a lot of onion. So I would say a large onion, halved and then thinly sliced into half moons. I don't think the original recipe calls for quite so much, but, you know, a nice-sized onion, an 8-ounce onion is a lot of onion. And sauté the onion for 3-4 minutes until it just gets ever so slightly limp. And then add the rest of your ingredients, which are carrots. Now, a whole pound of carrots, I peel mine with a, you know, swivel-bladed peeler. If they're super duper clean, fresh carrots, all you need to do is wash them off. And cut that into half. They look prettier, though, actually, if you, in the end, if you peel them. But I use only a slight bit of pressure with my swivel bladed peeler just to get off the merest outside layer. Anyway, cut the carrots, if they're like normal carrots, into half inch pieces. If not, if they're those big, thick carrots, then cut them in half and then into half-inch pieces. And you're going to end up with 3 to 4 cups. That's a lot of carrots. And you also want 1/2 pound of pitted prunes. Now, if you made this the way my grandmother would make it, Simmis, and I've been searching for these for years now, she used large, sour prunes with the pits still in. Now, first of all, it's hard enough to find any prunes with the pits still in. Somehow they took out the pits. Prunes are a hard sell.
I've always been.
And I love them myself, but prunes are a hard sell. And years ago, this is very many years ago, 30 years ago, a big public relations firm was advising the Prune Council, I guess they were called, in those days, probably still, these agricultural products all had marketing orders from the federal government that gave them money to promote their products. So the prune growers hired this consulting PR firm, and the PR firm sent out letters to all the food editors around the country who they were in touch with and said, how do you feel about our renaming prunes dried plums, which is, of course, what they are? And I thought, well, how silly, you know, prunes are prunes. Years later, I had a producer/assistant on the radio, and a really wonderful woman, and she was vegetarian. And before we got on the air one day, she was eating out of a box dried plums. It said on the box, dried plums. I said, oh, you're eating prunes. She said, no, they're dried plums. I said, well, they only last year they were called prunes. And she said, oh, they were? You know, and she had the same, you know, reaction that most people did. It said, like, only for old people who were constipated. Prunes are delicious.
I used to sit with my grandmother and eat prunes.
I think it's great. Listen, I wish I could eat more of them, believe me.
Wasn't there a cookie?
So a half a cup. Pardon me?
Wasn't there a cookie made with prunes that is a kid's?
Oh, there are a million things made with prunes. Don't get me started. I love prunes. I'll tell you something I used to do all the time. In Cornwall, where in the winter my house was kept it, 55, you could do this. I can't do it in my warm apartment. But I used to put prunes under red wine, and every time I had a big jug of it, a big jar of it, and every time I had a little leftover red wine, I would pour it either into my prune jar or my vinegar jar. My vinegar jar never worked out quite as well as the prune jar, but those prunes just plumped up in red wine were sensational, and you could eat them at any time of day or night. Anyway, back to the recipe. You need a half a pound of, if you can find prunes with the pits in, just warn everybody as they're reading this, there are pits in the prunes. I would use them because they stay in better shape. But a half a pound of prunes, if they have pits, then, go to, a couple of extra ounces. So now you've added to this pan of sautéed onion, you've added your cut-up carrots, your prunes, which are not cut up. You could cut them up. I mean, I sometimes take a scissors. They're big ones. I'll take a scissors and cut each one in half, not more than that. And a half a cup of water, and put this on top of the stove, and as soon as it starts to cook, put the chicken skin side up on top of the tzimmis, and any of this glaze that you put on the chicken, scrape it into the pan, drizzling it over everything. And put the skillet in, uncovered, for about 35 minutes. I think the chicken is, the chicken is certainly safe at 165. This is a chicken thighs. But really, you need a good 35 minutes at 400 degrees to get the skin nice and crackly. And then, of course, if you have any juices at the bottom of the pan, which you probably will, spoon that over the chicken as you serve it. And I don't know what to serve it with. I always want a potato kugel. And actually, a listener just wrote to me and said, I made your potato kugel and it didn't work out and it didn't look like the picture. Well, I understand it not looking like the picture. I remember that. I mean, I don't have to remember. The book is right next to me here. Mine doesn't look like the picture either, but I do make that recipe in Jewish home cooking all the time. It is one of my favorite things to eat, potato kugel. And it's nothing but great. It's the same mixture you would use for potato pancakes, pretty much, except that you put it in the oven and bake it. And I've learned over the years, it has two qualities. When you first take it out of the oven, 20 minutes later, which you got to let it sit and calm down once it comes out of the oven, it's one thing. And then if you reheat it the next day, it's another thing. And I realized my grandmother must have always, I know she didn't actually, we did eat potato pudding straight out of the oven more or less, but we also ate it reheated because she was always feeding 20 some odd people on the holidays. And so some things you had to make ahead, and the fact is you could make the potato pudding the day before, and now I understand you reheat. Well, I don't know. Is it better, or is it just because I'm so... I love that reheated flavor. There are certain things that do reheat. In fact, Mitchell Davis, who is now, I think, a professor of food ways or something like that at NYU, he used to be the communications director for the Beard Foundation, but... I won't hold that against him because he's a very nice person. And he wrote a book that I treasure. And he dismisses this book nowadays, but it's called The Mensch Chef, like the French chef, yeah. But The Mensch Chef. Unfortunately, nobody got the title. I don't think the book sold all that well. But Mitchell is a very good cook, and I swear by his meatball recipe, at which, like a lot of the recipes in the book, he says this is better the next day. In fact, I think he makes a generalization that most Jewish food tastes, we should say Ashkenazi food, tastes better the second day. I wouldn't say the same of Sephardic food. Sephardic food, Mediterranean countries, more vegetables. So eat your vegetables. It's the new year. You should make a resolution. Especially if you don't eat vegetables. And I want to leave you with a vegetable dish.
All right.
I have enough time.
Oh, yeah.
It's so quick, yeah. I eat this at the Azerbaijani restaurant that we go to in Midwood. And I've looked in all my books on the Caucasus. I have several books on Caucasian cooking. I have two books on Afghani cooking. I've looked in all the possible references I have, and I have looked online for a recipe that duplicates this dish we eat at the restaurant, which is eggplant. They call it a salad. It's in the salad list. It's eggplant with walnuts and a sweet and sour dressing. Now, it's a little oily, but not really oily. And at first I was thinking, oh, they must fry the eggplant. But then I thought, I don't want to stand and fry it. It was a hot day last week. So I stuck it. I had these two, what I call Japanese, but when I bought them, they were calling them Italian eggplants. They were really the long, narrow eggplants. Mm. So I cut each one into four quarters, and I brushed them heavily with olive oil. You know, eggplant is like a sponge. It absorbs the oil. So I brushed them with oil, good olive oil, and I stuck them under the broiler until they were tender, which wasn't very long, shorter cooking than I thought. Wasn't even 10 minutes, and a little bit charred. I did cook them very close to the heat. So I made sure that they were, even the thickest portions were tender, and the other parts that weren't so thick were really soft, which is the textures I wanted. And it had a nice little char flavor. So these were very long quarters, so I then cut the quarters in half, and I tossed them with pomegranate molasses, which is something you buy in the store. And since I know that they use a lot of pomegranates in their cooking in this part of the world, and in fact, in Afghanistan, it's a major crop of pomegranates, I thought that likely was the sweet and sour that they referred to at my Azerbaijani restaurant. They call it sweet and sour. But anyway, I tossed the warm, still warm eggplant with quite not enough pomegranate. I used about a tablespoon. I'm going to make it again this morning, and I'm going to use double. I'm going to use maybe 2 tablespoons of pomegranate molasses. If you have tamarind syrup, I think that's a good substitute because it's another one of those sweet tart things. And also an ingredient used in this part of the world. But I think that in my restaurant they're using pomegranate molasses. It's not syrup. It's really thick like molasses. It's cooked down pomegranate juice or grenadine. Anyway, it's sweet and sour. And then tossed it with walnuts, crispy, and feta and put crumbled feta cheese on top. It's really good salad. And we order it every time we go. So I'm thinking, this is so easy. I can only figure. So I asked my waiter, Artem, who has been our waiter now for several years, so he knows me, and I've asked him more than once, and he more than once has given me the same answer to the question. I said, Artem, what do they put on this eggplant? He says, I'm only the waiter, I'm not the cook.
There you go. No dice.
So now where they're really... they've been open all through the pandemic, but with only dining outside as long as you could do that. And then we all came inside, and now, I don't know, everybody's going outside again. And I haven't been back in 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, you could go inside. But it was very, very sparsely attended, so to speak, at lunchtime. And Artem said, well, you know, we're doing okay at night, but nobody's back for lunch yet. So maybe now... they'll let me in the kitchen. Because not only do I want to see what they do with this eggplant, but I'm not going to... They grill like nobody grills, and that's the chief reason I go there, is I can eat fabulous grilled meats and chicken. I never order grilled chicken in a restaurant except here. Anyway, they have a seasoning that I can't duplicate. I've tried, and I really want to see what the chef is doing. And now they have a new chef, a new Afghani chef, not new, like he's a refugee Afghani chef. I don't know when he came over. But the other day I saw these two guys eating what looked like eggs, and in fact was eggs. I walked over to the table to find out what they were eating. and they were eating, they said special omelet. They didn't speak English hardly. They said special omelet. So I asked Arthur, what's the deal with the special omelet? He said, well, you got to be here on the day that that chef is here. So, and we had the special omelet. It was sensational. It's like a frittata. Right. It's a pancake omelet. But this one had numerous vegetables and little pieces of chicken. It's really good.
All right.
I'm hungry now.
Well, I have to have something to eat.
Well, I'm going to eat. I'm going to make the chicken. I'm going to, for Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to make the tzimis, the chicken with tzimis.
All right. Well, I want you to have
all right, everybody, have a happy new year and eat your veggies.
That's it. And we'll speak to you next week, Arthur.
I hope so.
All right. Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.